This is special programming on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Our mission with this show is to provide accurate news and information about COVID-19. We want you to feel informed and empowered to make the decisions you need to for yourself and your family. That's why today we're talking Virus 101. Tonight, Blue Dot hosts Dave Shlom and Troy Klein, who teaches virology at Chico State, get into the details about viruses and what you can do to stop further human spread. Don't forget, we want to hear your questions and comments. Leave them on our website, mynspr.org. For Wednesday, March 18th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. Now, some news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. Authorities across the North State continue preparing for what appears almost inevitable, even as cases of the virus sweeping the globe remain at just a handful locally. Shutters were up and blinds drawn at many retail shops in the North State. Foot and vehicle traffic is noticeably sparse as Californians appear to mostly follow recommendations from authorities to avoid social interactions. Many restaurants have switched to to-go meals or delivery only. There remains one active confirmed case in Shasta County, a man in his 50s. There are no cases that have been confirmed in Butte, Glenn, or other counties in the region. Statewide, however, the number of cases continues rising. The California Department of Public Health today reported 598 confirmed positive cases. That's up from 472 yesterday and 335 on Sunday. The number of fatalities increased by 2 over the last 24 hours to 13 in the state. A shelter-in-place order issued yesterday for Davis was expanded to all of Yolo County today. Fresno also joined the growing list of cities under such orders, joining most Bay Area counties. Governor Gavin Newsom eased regulation of the trucking industry, including mandatory rest periods for drivers on Tuesday in an effort to reduce logistical delays of food supplies and medical equipment. The governor today also suspended standardized testing for California's 6 million K-12 students. Meanwhile, state health officials announced that they've built a new website specifically about the coronavirus designed for ordinary people. The site is said to provide the latest information and potentially life-saving tips. It can be found at www.covid19.ca.gov. California State Parks today announced the immediate closure of all campgrounds in the system. Visitor centers were ordered closed and all tours and events canceled last week. Trails, parking areas, beaches, and restrooms will remain open. Visitors are urged to carry their own soap and hand sanitizer and keep a 6-foot distance from other visitors. The Trinity County Sheriff's Office today announced it would cease public fingerprinting immediately. Health officials in Glenn County have urged a ban on mass gatherings and for those 65 and older to avoid non-essential activities, for restaurants to allow pickup and delivery only, and for all bars to close. There are no known cases in the county. The Shasta County Library System announced it would cease normal operations at the close of business Friday. All locations will be closed to the public until further notice, but items reserved online or by phone will be available for drive-through pickup. Late fees and due dates for materials will also be suspended. The national movie theater chain Cinemark announced via Twitter that all locations will be closed nationally beginning tonight. The Pageant Theater at Chico Art House announced it was closing until further notice as well. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage about the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. With so many questions about this virus coming in from you and so much information to take in from the news, we've decided to devote this episode completely to Virus 101. And who better to facilitate that topic than science educator and communicator and host of NSPR's Blue Dot, Dave Shlom. Today, Shlom explores viruses and the current pandemic with Troy Klein, assistant professor of biological sciences who teaches virology at Chico State. I'll let them take it from here.
I want to start with kind of a virology 101, because a lot of us really don't understand what viruses are. We think most of us think about computer viruses these days instead of the biological ones. So I have a question for you.
Sure. Yes.
Are viruses alive?
That's a philosophical question. And I actually start my virology course each semester by having students discuss whether they think viruses are alive or they are not alive. I think if you had to give a yes or no answer to that, technically they are not alive because they don't display some of the characteristics of what we would consider to be a living organism.
And so compare them, for example, to bacteria. How are they different? Because they really are kind of a strange thing when you think about the spectrum of living things. And that's why I asked you that question, is explain to us what viruses are compared to other microorganisms.
The comparison to bacteria is actually a good one to make because it highlights some of the differences between viruses and other organisms that can cause infectious disease of humans. Viruses are far, far smaller than bacteria. You need special microscopes called an electron microscope in order to view viruses. Viruses, unlike bacteria, cannot grow or replicate or divide on an inanimate surface. So while you might pick up a virus from a doorknob or a sink handle, the virus can't grow there. A virus has to be inside a living cell and use that cell as a host in order to grow and replicate and make more copies of itself.
Could you explain to us, you know, in kind of in simple terms, how they go about that? They like invade the cells and use their proteins and DNA. What exactly do they do once they get inside a cell?
Yeah, so the phrase that you might hear commonly is that viruses hijack their host cells in order to make more copies of themselves. And that's an accurate description. But so viruses attach to a host cell. So there are interactions between components of the virus particle and components of the target cell. And after that attachment, viruses are taken up into the cell. And this usually is the virus coaxing the cell to take it up into itself. And then the virus continues to hijack host machinery or repurpose the machinery in a host cell in order to make more copies of itself. Viruses have very small genomes. They encode only the bare essentials, and so they rely on many parts of a host cell in order to successfully complete a replication cycle.
And before we go on, one other question. They're called coronaviruses for a reason. Can you explain why they're called? It has nothing to do with one of my favorite Mexican beers.
No, that's just a coincidence. If you've seen images of this new coronavirus recently, you may have noticed that it has sort of a crown-looking projection that comes from the surface of the particle. These spike proteins, they're called, form this what looks to be a crown, or the virus looks like a sun, which is where the word coronavirus comes from. They look like the sun.
Yeah, and they look kind of like crowns with those spikes. Right. Do those spikes have some specific mechanical, you know, biological purpose?
Absolutely. So that spike protein is actually the protein that the virus uses to attach to a host cell and to gain entry into that cell. It's also the protein that we direct our antibody response against when we become infected naturally, or in the future when there is a vaccine available for these coronaviruses. The vaccine will more than likely target that spike protein so that we will have antibodies that can bind to the spike protein, and that interaction will negate the virus's ability then to bind to our host cells and cause infection.
Oh, so the people working on those vaccines right now, they're working on making those spikes, you know, less effective, or, you know, in a way using them against the virus's, you know, target.
So the purpose or the goal or the object of a vaccine will be to expose our immune cells to the spike protein outside of the context of functional virus particles so that we see the spike protein as foreign, direct an antibody response against it, and then we have B cells that are primed and ready to go if we ever become exposed naturally to the whole virus. Those B cells can respond and produce antibodies that will attach to the spike protein and inhibit the ability of the virus to infect our cells. Yes.
Oh, I see. And because this is a novel or new virus, we don't have any natural immunity to it, which is what is making this particularly dangerous.
That's correct. Absolutely.
And another interesting thing about this virus, and I don't know if you can answer this, is it's strange that it seems to attack most virulently older people, you know, people my age and older, people over 60.
Right.
And it doesn't seem to affect the pediatric population, whereas influenza tends to attack kind of both ends of the spectrum, the very young and very old.
That's right.
Any thoughts on that?
I think this is a standing question that scientists, researchers are interested in this observation. You're right. Typically, the most vulnerable in terms of severe influenza disease are elderly and the frail, and those who are the youngest, infants. And with the data that we currently have, we're not seeing severe disease or fatal disease in the pediatric population, which is a good thing, and it's a bit puzzling and a question that scientists will be looking into, I'm sure.
Yeah, and yet it's young people can spread the virus, you know, just as well as anyone.
Yes, so young people can spread the virus. Anybody who is infected with or without symptoms is believed to be able to spread this virus.
You're listening to special coverage about the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. Today is all about Virus 101, so we can better understand what we're all up against and what we can do. More just ahead. This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Today we're getting into the science and details about the novel coronavirus with Blue Dot's Dave Shlohm and Chico State's Assistant Professor of Biological Sciences, Troy Klein, who specializes in virology. Now back to the conversation.
Okay, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what we're all, you know, trying to do, which is protect ourselves and our families and our loved ones and our communities. So let's talk about the measures, both micro and macro. Let's start out with, you know, the advice you hear all the time is hand washing. Can you explain to us, you know, from your point of view as someone who's an expert on microbiology, what's going on when we wash our hands and the length of time we're supposed to do it by? Give us a sense of what we're actually doing in terms of combating a virus that could be, you know, viruses that could be on our hands.
Sure. So understanding why soap is so effective at killing viruses, you've got to understand first what viruses are made of. So in addition to that RNA or DNA genome, and some proteins that protect that genome, some viruses have this fatty lipid envelope. And soap is really good at disrupting those lipid molecules in the viral envelope and essentially breaking apart the structure of the virus so that it is no longer infectious. And the recommended time of 20 seconds from the CDC, 20 seconds that you're supposed to wash your hands, is to make sure that there is sufficient exposure of the virus particles to the soap, as well as giving you, as the hand washer, a sufficient amount of time to make sure that you're covering all the parts of your hands that need to be covered, under the fingernails, between the fingers, palms of the hands, backs of the hands.
Yes, and if you're just joining us, we're talking to Troy Klein. He's an assistant professor in the Biological Sciences Department at California State University, Chico, and you're listening to special coverage of the coronavirus in the North State. And so hand washing and the length of time, you know, you hear all these things about, you know, do sing happy birthday twice. There's, you know, my favorite one, what I do is I do the opening to Star Trek, space, the final frontier, and, you know, all the way to boldly go where no one has gone before, and then I'm done. So, you know, that length of time is important because I know as a hand washer, I'm terrible at that. I tend to just, you know, do a quick rinse, get a little soap on, you know, make sure the fingertips done, you know, and it's like 5 seconds and I'm out of there usually. But now I'm trying to be more more conscientious. So the length of time really is important and how much coverage you get, right?
It is important. Yeah. I think if this is one of the most basic things that we can do, washing our hands. And I would suspect that any time washing the hands is better than no time washing the hands. But this is one of the most basic things we can do, something that we can all do that has the potential to have a large impact on slowing the spread of this virus and all seasonal viruses.
And what about hand sanitizer or also like spraying Lysol on surfaces? Do those things, are they effective against viruses?
They are absolutely effective. They're all effective. These are things that we already can purchase. They're already effective. I will mention that hand sanitizers are potentially not as effective as washing your hands with good old-fashioned soap, because the exposure time with these alcohol-based hand sanitizers has to be a little bit longer. And often when people use the hand sanitizers, while chemically they are effective, we often don't use them correctly, meaning we don't use enough of the hand sanitizer, or we don't use it for long enough. So what is recommended is to use a sufficient amount of the hand sanitizer and rub it all over your hands until your hands are completely dry. That is a way to ensure that you are getting maximum and optimal contact between the alcohol-based sanitizer and the virus particles.
And then, of course, the advice, which is really almost impossible to follow, of not touching your face.
Yeah.
Because we just tend to do that without thinking about it.
Absolutely.
That's the virus's entryway, right? When we touch our face.
That's right. So this is a virus that is spread through respiratory droplets. And so if we have the virus on our hands and then we touch our face, touch our nose, we can inhale the virus, breathe it in, and put it right next to the cells that it wants to infect.
And this one really does go after the lungs, doesn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the bigger picture, society. So talk to us about the importance of social distancing and why it's important to, you know, like Dr. Anthony Fauci said, you know, the Wayne Gretzky analogy, you don't react to this. You have to go to where the puck's going to be, not where it is now. And shutting down schools, you know, in this area before there's any cases in, right, in the area here that I know of, like in Tehama County, that doing that proactively is a really prudent thing to do.
Okay. So we don't have any confirmed cases yet in Butte County, and I'm not aware of what the situation is in our neighboring counties. But it is likely that there are people who are infected in the listening area of NSPR. They may not be experiencing symptoms. If they are experiencing symptoms, they may not have been tested and confirmed to be positive yet. But it's very likely that there are infected individuals in our region. And so the goal of these social distancing measures is to limit our exposure to others in the community who may be infected and walking around without symptoms or very mild symptoms, and then becoming infected ourselves and spreading the virus to those with whom we come into contact. Or if I am the person who is infected without symptoms or with just mild symptoms, I want to distance myself from others so that I don't put others at risk of becoming infected as well. You may have heard this term, flattening the curve, which yeah. is going to become one of 2020's most memorable catchphrases, I'm sure. What we're talking about is an epidemiological tool that's used to display, and it displays this in a graphical format, the number of cases of an illness over a certain period of time. So when public health officials talk about flattening the curve, they mean that we're trying to decrease the rate of virus spread within a community. And that's accomplished by good personal hygiene, so going back to your hand washing. And also it's accomplished by the social distancing measures that are being implemented.
And, you know, our elderly, anybody, you know, even my age at 60 and older are the most vulnerable. But it's really incumbent on the younger generations to be the heroes here, the so-called millennials, to practice this social distancing, to avoid parties, to avoid large groups, and just kind of hunker down and avoid each other so that they don't spread things. And like I keep telling people, it's like, yes, you may not get seriously ill, but you may be responsible for killing either your grandmother or somebody else's.
That's correct. So people who are in their 20s, in their teens, in their 30s, there's no evidence that these people are not becoming infected at the same rate as those who are older. So we know people who are younger are becoming infected, and we know that people who are younger are able to transmit this virus, presumably just as easily as those who are older. And so this really is a public health crisis, and we have to take steps to do what is in the best interest of the public health, what's best for the community at large. So if you're under the age of 60, and you don't have certain pre-existing health conditions, the likelihood of you experiencing severe or fatal disease from this virus is very, very low. But if you are infected, you can be a source of infection for others around you who may be elderly, who may have underlying health conditions. So you're right. It's time to think and act according to what is best for the community, even if that means temporary inconveniences in your own life. Canceling activities, social events, parties that you were really looking forward to.
For yourself personally, you know, I'm sure your friends and family know what you do for a living and that you're an expert on viruses. Are you getting lots of questions from them and, you know, having to have conversations with them to, you know, kind of give them some of this virology 101?
I have. Yeah. I've had conversations with my family. I'm currently in the semester that I teach virology on campus, and I've worked aspects of this coronavirus outbreak into the virology course. And going forward, though courses are transitioning to online for a time, I'm going to direct all of the students learning to this outbreak so that they can become ambassadors for basic virology information as well, and inform their friends and their family about the situation and help them to sort through the information that is circulating out there, what is reliable, what is not reliable, based on the science.
Yeah, and there's a lot of really unreliable information out there.
There is. There is a lot of bad information out there. And so I think it's important to point out that where we get our information is really important. There's a lot of false information. So I would direct people to the County Department of Public Health websites or to the California Department of Public Health or to the CDC website for reliable updates on the situation and information.
So in my encounters with people in my community, I hear a range of reactions to this from fear and, you know, understanding that they need to isolate themselves and their grandparents. And sometimes grandparents can be stubborn about that and not want to, you know, stay home. And you hear a lot of people saying, oh, this is just a big overreaction, closing the schools and, you know, telling people to stay home. Could you explain to our listeners out there and maybe help them explain to their neighbors why this is not an overreaction?
Sure. So 3 months from now, 4 months from now, 6 months from now, whenever this is over, I hope, actually, that there will still be a lot of people out there who are saying, this didn't get as bad as everybody thought it would. We overreacted. I don't hope that because I want people to doubt the science or public health recommendations. I'm saying that because I want to look back in 6 months and say, the science was good, the public health recommendations were good, and here's why. Because we didn't have the outbreak that we thought we did. We implemented these measures, we put them in place, people complied, and we halted transmission of the virus so that we didn't have the situation that is happening in other parts of the world.
Yeah, especially Italy.
Like Italy. Social distancing, it's an inconvenience. This is not something that we're familiar with in the United States. We're not accustomed to this, having to do this. And there's something about the American spirit, the nature of Americans, that really resists these levels of control. But I think it's informative to look at the past and to see how social distancing measures have impacted public health in the United States before. So in 1918, just over 100 years ago, there was a global influenza pandemic. Tens of millions of people died. Anywhere between 50 and 100 million people across the world were killed in this pandemic. In the thick of the outbreak, the city of Philadelphia went ahead with a parade that was scheduled. This parade attracted large crowds, and within days after that parade, thousands of people became ill, and thousands of people ended up dying. Tens of thousands of people ended up dying in the city of Philadelphia. In contrast, the city of St. Louis, during the same pandemic, the same outbreak, the city of St. Louis implemented good public health policy, closing schools, limiting travel, the same kinds of things that we're seeing today. As a result, far fewer people became ill in St. Louis, and far fewer people died. Now, this new coronavirus inherently is not as lethal as the 1918 influenza virus, but these social distancing public health measures will have the same impact on this outbreak in 2020 as it did on the influenza pandemic in 1918. If people take them seriously, if people comply and limit their exposure and time in the community, we will halt spread of this virus.
Yes, and that is the best advice I could think of hearing. And I want to thank you so much, Troy Klein, for sharing your expertise with us, because it's always better to be armed with knowledge and knowledge from someone with expertise. So I appreciate you sharing that with all of us here in the North State.
Well, thank you.
Troy Klein, Associate Professor of Biological Sciences at California State University, Chico.
That was Blue Dot host Dave Schlom speaking with Chico State Assistant Professor of Biological Sciences, Troy Klein, who specializes in virology. And that is your program for Wednesday, March 18th. To listen again or share the program, head to mynspr.org. There you can ask us questions and let us know, how are you keeping yourself and your loved ones safe? This special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, and Phil Wilkie. Our engineer is Matt Fidler. And a big thanks to Dave Schlom for hosting this episode. Thanks for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, and this is special coverage on the coronavirus pandemic from North State Public Radio. We'll see you tomorrow evening at 6:30.